Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, ni hao. In
ni
India,
hao.
Namaste. In Japan, konnichiwa. In Korea, annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, zdravstvuyte. In Germany, guten tag. In Poland, dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Grand rising, grand rising. Thank you for joining me. I'm Viata, your host for Health and Well-Being with Viata. Aren't these the most exciting times forever? We were born for such a time as this. How many of you agree with that statement? We were born for such a time as this. Crazy times, Twilight Zone, all of that. So I'm excited every Friday morning to wake up, do some joint rolling with my listeners of Blog Talk Radio, Female Solution, because together, when we come together, we create unity. We create love for this temple body vessel. So thank you for joining me this morning. And I'd like to share with you, first off, a reading that I read this morning from my book, Meditations from the Mat. It's a 365-day reading of meditation, of mostly about yoga, but it's really about life. So I want to share this with you to hopefully motivate you to be your very best and to just shine today and to really learn. This is about learning. So I'm going to read this. It's a quote by George Leonard. The human individual is equipped to learn and go on learning prodigiously from birth to death. From birth to the dash. You know, sometimes people talk about the dash. What about the dash in between birth and death? Well, the dash, this reading says, is about learning. And this is precisely what sets him or her apart from all other known forms of life. Man has at various times been defined as a building animal, a working animal, and a fighting animal. But all of these definitions are incomplete and finally false. Man is a learning animal, and the essence of the species is encoded in that simple term. Wow, I love that this morning. I thought about even though I'm 67 years old, I'm still learning. And today I hope that you will learn something new about how to apply the biblical and faith laws that we grew up with and that we still experience in our journey on planet Earth. So I know why you're here early this morning to do some joint rolling. Why? Because our joints need lubricating. And we have what's in here called synovial fluids in every joint, even our neck joint. So we want to start off this morning. This health and well-being is about loving our body, learning about our body. And that's what that quote is really, in my mind, focusing on, learning more about this temple. We have, I have to say this before we roll our joints, because I don't want to bring it up later. Maybe I'll bring it up later. But let's just get busy rolling joints. And first, before we start the music, let's just close our eyes and breathe in through our nose and out our nose. Breathe in and breathe out. Let's just calm ourselves first thing in the morning. Breathe in and breathe out. When you're ever feeling stressed, anxious, nervous, breathing is the best medicine for calming the body, bringing the body back into balance. Breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Sometimes you can breathe out through the mouth, whatever feels comfortable to you. Breathing in and out. Now let's just rotate our neck before we get busy on the floor, rolling joints. Chin to the chest. Slowly rotating the neck around to loosen up the muscles that hold this ton of weight on our shoulders. This head weighs a lot of pounds, so it is helpful to strengthen the muscles around the neck and the shoulders and help the head to have a better pedestal to lay on. So slowly loosening up the stiffness, and let's just reverse that then the other direction. That feels so much better. I had a little pain and stiffness in my right side when I woke up, so I'm feeling almost totally pain free. I need to drink. I'll be drinking my ginger water this morning. Every morning I heat up some water, I squeeze a little lime or lemon, whatever I have, and then I put ginger powder in that water along with turmeric and cayenne pepper. And I put a little honey in there. So that's my morning drink, and I don't eat until afternoon because I'm on intermittent fasting. Why? Because when you stop eating, your digestive system comes to a rest. And your body takes that energy to heal whatever needs healing. The food gets in the way of healing. So it's best in my life and what I've learned is that it's best not to eat in the morning, not to eat a lot at least, and to let the body, especially between the hours, I believe it's 10, 11, 12, to let the body do the healing work it needs. So now it's time for healing. Let's put some good music on and roll these joints. Let's see, get my intro music going here. Time for healing. Intro music. Okay, here we go. So we're going to lay on our backs, kick our legs up, and roll our ankles and wrists first. And then we're going to go to our knees. And after we roll our ankles and wrists, we go to our knees, then our elbows, and then we turn over on our side and roll our leg around to give those hip joints some lubrication on both sides. So let's do it. It's time for heat.
Take a look around. holding them against their sisters and brothers, yeah.
Healing through our
healing,
all of you and family,
all around the world.
those shoulders, roll those shoulders, roll, roll, roll your shoulders, roll, roll, roll your shoulders. Breathing in, giving, this not only lubricates your shoulders, but you're exercising the muscles in your back. So always good to roll the shoulders. All right, let's just rub our hands together while we're sitting here. Place those hands on the back of the neck and squeeze and release. Squeeze and release. Squeeze and release. Squeeze and release. Ah, breathing in and out. Squeezing and releasing. All that blood is moving better when you do this. And your lymphatic system is draining better when you do this. And let's just give our arms, pat down our arms all the way, loving ourselves. When we touch our skin, that's always a loving action. So patting our thymus gland, that's a very important point right here in the middle of your chest for building your immune system. Breathing in and out. And then patting around the breast. The breast, we have a lot of lymph activity going around the breast. It's always good to pat the breast, squeeze the breast, and then give your microbiome some love. Massage around the navel. Just pat around the navel in both directions. That just says, I love you. I thank you. Gratitude, gratitude, gratitude. Give those hips a little padding and get the gluteus maximus. Woo-hoo! Get some blood flowing there. And go down the thighs and the legs. We're ready now. Woo-hoo! We are ready to do sit down and learn. That's what that meditate. We are learning animals. So I hope today you're going to be filled with knowledge and faith and inspiration to fight the battles before us and to shine our light. So I'm going to move my camera and my computer back to my studio. And here we go. All right, we're back in the studio. And my dad's with me. It's my dad back there. That's the cover of my dad's book, Sherman J. Howard, Football and Beyond. We're working on a documentary again. We have video from before he passed, and we're preparing a documentary. So thank you for joining me this morning. Exciting information coming your way. We're learning animals every day. So this show has been titled Biblical Laws and Faith for Better Health. I had a conversation with someone about what they were eating, and I realized, okay, biblically, that food is not supposed to be put in our body. But some people believe, especially Christians believe, that Christians believe that the New Testament overrides all those old commandments in the Bible, that you can pray over everything and eat it, even scavengers. And I thought, really? Does that even make sense? So we're learning animals. So that's why I titled this show Biblical Laws and Faith for Better Health, because some people in their journey want to throw out the Bible, and that's the baby in the water, throw out the baby and the dirty water. I was reading something the other day that, it was a video about King James. Oh, it was about gay. Does God hate gay people? Something like that. And the answer was, why would he have a gay person translate or produce a Bible? So I don't know how many of you know King James, or we call him King Jimmy, and my was gay. It was a gay man, a king who had a boyfriend. Just saying, do your research. We're learning every day. King James was gay. So that was the issue. That was the question on this video, is does God love gay people? And the guy was saying, well, King James. So those types of aware, oh my goodness, really? Is that true about the Bible? Some people want to, that's the dirty water, sort of, in the that comes with the Bible. Throw it all out, doesn't have any value, no good. But I tend to disagree. And we're going to talk about, we're going to share about the things we've learned in the, especially the last 2 years, and that have helped us get more into the Bible, that have motivated us to read the Bible where there's wisdom, because all the confusion about the government and the pharmaceutical industry and the sick care system, all that confusion has just driven me to at least read the Psalms and Proverbs every day. And my Christian friends and I have conversations all the time about the scriptures. We talk about the scriptures, how relevant they are. So I want to play, first of all, a little clip before we go to the break about the Ten Commandments, because that's probably the most common law of the Bible that we're familiar with. And we want to just dive into these scriptures to ask ourselves, how relevant are they in terms of improving our health? That's what this is all about. If there's something in there that can help us get rid of the fear and the anxiety. You know, most of us grew up watching, The Wizard of Oz, right? The Wizard of Oz, remember the scene where Dorothy and all her friends were watching the wizard at the, where there was some wizard with fire coming out of his mouth, and then Toto went up and pulled back the curtain and said, oh my goodness, it's just a man. Well, today, I would say the Wizard of Monkeypox is with us. He's pulling back curtain, he's doing his little magical work, the Wizard of Monkeypox. Trying to bring fear. And today we're just going to pull back that curtain and reveal the lies and deception, because this new virus they're trying to bring fear about, they're saying the lymphatic system becomes swollen as one of the symptoms. Well, that's the case in any disease. I might have to turn on a light. Seems like I'm fading here. That's the case with any disease. Any sickness, your lymphatic system can swell up if it's not draining properly. So I always emphasize some lymphatic work on my yoga class on Wednesday and even here. Always be mindful to work on this part of your body as draining the lymph system under the arms, tapping the chest, all the work we do, even joint rolling. And going up and down on your toes is how you get rid of the Wizard of Monkeypox. Just take better care of this temple. And that's why we're going to talk about biblical and faith laws. But I want to play first about the Ten Commandments, some things to think about that might help improve our health.
No document in world history so changed the world for the better as did the Ten Commandments. Western civilization, the civilization that developed universal human rights, created women's equality, ended slavery, created parliamentary democracy, among other unique achievements, would not have developed without them. As you will see when each of the Ten Commandments is explained, these commandments are as relevant today as when they were given over 3,000 years ago. In fact, they're so relevant that the Ten Commandments are all that is necessary to make a good world, a world free of tyranny and cruelty. Imagine for a moment a world in which there was no murder or theft. In such a world, there would be no need for armies or police or weapons. Men and women and children could walk anywhere at any time of day or night without any fear of being killed or robbed. Imagine further a world in which no one coveted what belonged to their neighbor, a world in which children honored their mother and father and the family unit thrived, a world in which people obeyed the injunction not to lie. The recipe for a good world is all there in these 10 sublime commandments. But there is a catch. The Ten Commandments are predicated on the belief that they were given by an authority higher than any man, any king, or any government. That's why the sentence preceding the Ten Commandments asserts the following. God spoke all these words. You see, if the Ten Commandments, as great as they are, were given by any human authority, then any person could say, who is this man Moses? Who is this king or queen? Who is this government to tell me how I should behave? Okay, so why is God indispensable to the Ten Commandments? Because, to put it as directly as possible, if it isn't God who declares murder wrong, murder isn't wrong. Yes, this strikes many people today as incomprehensible, even absurd. Many of you are thinking, is this guy saying you can't be a good person if you don't believe in God? Let me respond as clearly as possible. I am not saying that. Of course there are good people who don't believe in God, just as there are bad people who do. And many of you are also thinking, I believe murder is wrong. I don't need God to tell me. Now, that response is only half true. I have no doubt that if you're an atheist and you say that you believe murder is wrong, you believe murder is wrong. But forgive me, you do need God to tell you. We all need God to tell us. You see, even if you figured out murder is wrong on your own, without God and the Ten Commandments, how do you know it's wrong? Not believe it's wrong. I mean, know it's wrong. The fact is, you can't. Because without God, right and wrong are just personal beliefs, personal opinions. I think shoplifting is okay. You don't. Unless there is a God, all morality is just opinion and belief. And virtually every atheist philosopher has acknowledged this. Another problem with the view that you don't need God to believe that murder is wrong is a lot of people haven't shared your view. And you don't have to go back very far in history to prove this. In the 20th century, millions of people in communist societies and under Nazism killed about 100 million people. And that doesn't count a single soldier killed in war. So don't get too confident about people's ability to figure out right from wrong without a higher authority. It's all too easy to be swayed by a government or a demagogue or an ideology or to rationalize that the wrong you're doing isn't really wrong. And even if you do figure out what is right and wrong, God is still necessary. People who know the difference between right and wrong do the wrong thing all the time. You know why? Because they can. They can because they think no one is watching. But if you recognize that God is the source of moral law, you believe that he is always watching. So even if you're an atheist, you would want people to live by the moral laws of the Ten Commandments. And even an atheist has to admit that the more people who believe God gave them, and therefore they are not just opinion, the better the world would be. In 3,000 years, no one has ever come up with a better system than the God-based Ten Commandments for making a better world, and no one ever will. I'm Dennis Prager. Join Prager University, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and sign up for free at PragerU.com.
All right. So he didn't list the Ten. We're going to maybe touch on a few of the Ten Commandments. These days when we have mass shootings, it's maybe a little important to touch on thou shalt not kill. But I'm a person who is a holistic life coach. And if we don't deal with the metaphysical mind, body, spirit elements, we don't do a complete analysis of anything, in my opinion. So when we look at the commandments and the Bible, I think it's really important to dive into all the levels, mind, body, and soul. Because my belief in my period of time that I'm here is I live in a vessel of love. My soul lives in a vessel of love. I identify more with my soul energy than my body, who I am in this journey. And as you heard on that audio, the word God was used to describe this book of the Bible and the commandments that we learned as children. But it's important to understand who is God. Because if we're going to talk about biblical laws and faith for better health, one of the most important things is one of the most important commandments is thou shalt not covet. So in your relationship with the universe, I call Yahuwah, who is God? God is the universe. The universe is God in my belief. So does that resonate with you as something to help improve your health? That if God is the universe, then of course you believe in God, or do you? And if the universe is God, that's what we need to clarify. What does that mean in terms of your journey on this earth to have better health? Because that's really what it's all about. As I mentioned, the Wizard of Oz today, or at least this week, is the monkeypox wizard. They're putting that in your face in the news. I don't even open up the news on my phone anymore because every time I open it up, it has something to do with fear. And they're not promoting faith or life or health in the news. The media for the last 2 weeks has promoted fear about mass shootings. And there's something deeper going on even with that. So you're not going to get the truth from the news. So it's better, in my thought, is to avoid the news as much as possible. The major mainstream media is all about fear-mongering right now. And the Wizard of Monkeypox is their biggest actor right now in every form. So let us dive into, after the commercial, we're going to dive into biblical and faith laws. And I have a friend joining me from Florida to have a discussion about our childhood habits and behaviors and how that translates into adult behaviors for better health. Because we all agree we ate a lot of stuff, a lot of chemicals, a lot of crap, a lot of meat, all that was in our childhood. But do we need the same type of foods we had in our childhood? Do we need those foods or want those foods for better health in our adult life? So we're going to take a commercial break. We have some new commercials that I need to look for. Let's see. And then we're going to get into the faith and Bible laws that help us build our health and improve our health. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Beata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Oh man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Bible and our faith laws that we grew up with. So I've invited a friend of mine to come and join me because my friend, I think he's in the studio, I think he's handed up, Mikael Eubanks. Mikael Eubanks, is that you? Your mic is open?
Yes.
Welcome, my brother, my friend, my love. He's such a good influence on me. And Mikael has been on my Soul Purpose Healing show. We did a whole show together. He needs to write a book, I keep saying, about his life. And he and I are students of the Bible, I would say. Would you agree, Mikael, we are students of the Bible?
Yeah, I'm studying every day.
Yeah, hallelujah. So I thought of him as one of the best persons. And all of you, if you grew up in Sunday school, I'm sure you can relate and comment today if you choose. Just press 1 in the studio and just comment right here on Facebook Live on how the Bible can be used today to improve your health. And we heard earlier about the Ten Commandments. I thought he was going to read the Ten Commandments, but we don't need that. I'll give you the first 4, and we can even just jumpstart from thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not steal. How about those to start? And then Genesis 1:29, I wrote down, every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields shall you to you it shall be for food. That's a heavy one right there about what is food when we talk about health. People don't even identify what real food is. My grandson was eating some bag of something that his dad bought that it was really hot. And I read the 29-30 ingredients, and I pointed out to my grandson, listen, sweetheart, this is not food. These are chemicals. And you're just putting it in your body like it's nourishing you, that it's helping you. So, of course, eating has to be on our conversation today. And then the other one we're going to talk about, Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death. What exactly does that mean? So we're going to dive in that. But Mikael, we had the most interesting conversation yesterday about our ancestors, our grandparents, what they cooked for us. Just share, if you will, Mikael, your experience in food in your family when you were growing up.
Well, as I was thinking about it, I was thinking just a little while ago, we really weren't poor, but we ate pretty much the poor person's type of food. I'll put it like that. You know, it's like my uncle. I was raised by my aunt and uncle, and my uncle, he always worked in the factory from the time that I remember. I came to live with him when I was 5, and he always worked in the factory. So he made pretty good money. So as I said, we weren't poor. And then the house that we were raised in, it was a rooming house. And so they, had the business of renting rooms. Okay, so with that considered, we still ate what I considered as poor people's type of food. But I mean, we ate. We had, you know, on the weekends it was special. You know, we had, you know, I guess what they used to say, high, eating high on the hog. You know, where we would have like, you know, fried chicken, you know, in abundance. We would have like pastries because my aunt, she was a super cook, and you know, and would always have visitors by. So we always had visitors. We would feed the visitors, you know, and so it was like that. But however, we did, even though my people believed in God, they didn't go to church. They made me go to church.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I always had to go to church, but I said that to say this. So, but they believed, they were, you know, both my aunt and uncle were raised by people, by their parents who believed in the Bible, who believed in God, but yet they didn't believe in, I guess, you know, everything concerning the Ten Commandments, because we, you know, we pretty much, we ate what has been known today as what they call slave food, or what some people call soul food, which is bottom line slave food, because we ate the pork, we ate all manner of just about everything that came from the pig, we ate it, you know, as you and I were talking about. You know, we ate the chitlins, we ate the stomach of the pig. We, you know, they called it hog mouth. We ate the pig feet, we ate the pig ears, pig tails, and actually on New Year's, we had the hog head and all that. I mean, I you know, that stuff was, I used to think, how can people eat all of that? Because they was eating everything about their head. And I used to gag at thinking about it. But they had what they call hog head cheese.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they would, all that stuff, and you would eat that. Okay, then as I was telling you, Viada, you know, it seemed like poor people's food. You know, we would eat grits and eggs. We would eat some days. We would eat grits, bacon, and eggs, of course. And then we would eat, like, if we had fish, maybe the night before or that evening before, we'd eat fish and grits. And then I heard you were talking about, shrimp and grits. We may have had that because I know we ate shrimp and rice a lot. And as I was telling you, a lot of times what we had the evening before for dinner, sometimes we would have that for breakfast, because if we had chitlins, the evening before. And of course, when we had chitlins would last, my folk would buy a 10-pound pail
of
chitlins.
Yeah, whole bucket.
And it was my job. I always did the dirty work, and it was my job to clean those chitlins, and they better be clean, else I got.
Oh, my goodness.
If they weren't clean, I was in big trouble. So you
and
have to make sure those.
Smell stays with you forever. You never forget the smell of cleaning chitlins.
I still remember that smell. You smell it the whole house.
Yeah.
But anyway, if we ate chitlins, we would have chitlins and grits the next day. And then my aunt would take that gravy and put over the grits, and you get some toast, and you eat that, and you thought you were in hog heaven, so to speak. It was good. It tasted good.
Well, that's Mikael, you're not lying. Yes. It tastes good. That's why today when I hear people still eating like that, I'm like, that's comfort food. That's really comfort food, because it did taste good. But then what it did to your health, I mean, do you remember the people in your life being really healthy and energetic from eat that type of diet?
As I was telling you, when I was 16, I was stronger than most men, because not only did I have that diet, but we also had to work hard. I had to shovel coal and all that kind of stuff. I had to I had to take the residue, what they call the clinkers, out of the furnace. I had to carry that in a metal, like you have your bushel baskets. We had metal bushel baskets back there, and you had to load that thing up and then carry that upstairs from the basement, upstairs to the ground level, and take it out to the alley, to the trash. And so the trash man could pick up, and what they would do, they would pick up that heavy bushel basket loaded with those clinkers, which would be the residue from the coal. And, they would dump it and then leave the basket for you to use next time. But
so
anyway, all of
that. Eating like that? Are you still eating like that?
No, I don't eat like that. That's amazing, because they made sure you had three square meals. You're going to eat, three times a day, and you're going to eat what they call stick to the ribs food. And so, and that stick to the rib food was really, according to the scripture, wasn't the healthy food. Some of it was, because we had greens. We ate a lot of collard greens, mustard greens, turnip greens, stuff like that. And, actually with your meat, even though we ate meat on a regular basis, we didn't eat a lot of meat. Now, my uncle did, because my uncle, he was a big man. He weighed about 300 pounds. He was just
Whoa.
Under 6 feet. But he was very strong, very strong. I mean, as I say, he worked in the foundry, and he ate a lot. I mean, this is like when come to barbecue ribs, when we would eat ribs. Now, it was my job to be the barbecuer. I had to be out there outside while they're inside drinking and carrying on. I'm out there. I had to make sure those ribs were cooked and cooked a certain way. They had to be just right, or else I got in trouble. And when I say I got in trouble, I got my butt beat. And I mean, not whipped. I got my butt beat. And so I had to make sure I was always doing things according to, the regulations.
But
and
they
so,
ignored they ignored the biblical laws about food, right? Because unclean, we're talking about unclean meats that our ancestors, that our relatives indulge in all the time.
Yes.
And so
right.
What do you
they
think
didn't
the
have
consequence of that?
I'm sorry?
What was the consequence of that?
Okay, now that's a good question. I'm glad you asked, because actually my uncle ended up a diabetic, high blood pressure, all of that. He used to have sometimes he would even have it so bad he would go into a coma on the job, and they'd have to rush him out from the job to the hospital. Long story short, he suffered with that diabetes and heart trouble and all that stuff. He ended up getting gangrene because he got hurt out there on his job, and something fell on his foot or something and messed his foot up. And long story short, he ended up with gangrene. Because diabetics, that's what happens to them. They're really subject to devastation if they get an injury like that.
Circulation, I guess. And when I look back, the people in my life who were eating like that, they also ended up with diabetes. I had Mr. Ketchin was the one. I think he was overweight, blind, and had diabetes, and he was the main one eating those pig ears and pig thighs and all parts of it. So yeah, the result of that comfort eating, that good eating, was disease. So when we look at the Bible, that's a warning. These are laws of prevention that were ignored by many of our ancestors and relatives, and the result was disease. So we're now at a place of recognizing the consequences of eating for comfort versus nutrition. And Genesis 1:29, in my opinion, is the best word or law about what food is, and it's actually food is the whatever yields seed on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields shall be your food. So we've got a society that looks to a box or a package or a fast food restaurant as, quote, food. And even, they don't even have seeds. Half the fruits these days don't even have seeds in them. And we're still frying up that chicken and whatever else, whatever the other animal we can find. And that's what I want to really focus on about the animals, because here's the thing. I started, as I was researching for this show yesterday, I thought about all these mass shootings and all the people who died from so-called COVID and all that. And I thought, is this the karmic energy? And my friend Ralph Smart, who's on YouTube, Ralph Smart is a very wise man who talks about veganism. And he pointed out 65 billion animals are killed every year. And he said, that's karmic energy we're going to pay for. And when he said that, I said, wow, that's really something to think about. We're killing all these animals and not even thinking about the karmic consequences of that. And now when we have all these shootings, we're like, oh, this is horrible. We got to take away the guns, blah, blah, blah. And then is there a karmic energy that's working when we have all these people killing other people? And or is it that the God of the Bible is nowhere to be seen and this is just coincidence? What do you think? And then I've got two other callers who want to chime in. Are you there?
You're asking me what do I think?
About the possibility that all these killings and deaths that we've experienced over the last 2 years could be a result of all the 65 billion animals that have been killed?
Yeah, actually, I thought about it too, like what you said, that karma is coming back around because, you know, the animals are themselves are coming out and they're finding, here in Florida, I've gotten reports because I'm with this, hooked up with this neighborhood thing that where, you know, the communication between the neighbors, and they are reporting animals into coming out, you know, from the woods, and they're in the neighborhoods. They're seeing a lot of snakes. They're seeing foxes, fox. They're seeing wolves. They've even seen pumas, or what they call mountain lions, or whatever, and stuff like this. And then they're coming in. Actually, this one woman, she reported a raccoon came in. She had a couple of steaks on the grill. The raccoon came and grabbed one of the steaks and went on off, and she was so upset about it. But they've talked about animals coming in, you know, getting their, you know, raiding their garbage cans and all kind of stuff. These animals are, it's like they're like, okay, you know, we're gonna get you.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let me open up.
Let's see. This is Kwame Sunhorse, I believe. Your mic is open.
Grand Rising. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound like you're on the move again.
Yeah, I'm on my way up here in Illinois. I'm going up to visit my mom, but I'm stopping for an event this weekend in Navajo. The Zelda came down a couple of years ago too, but what you're speaking about is a book that's over 2,500 years old, and we're looking at that item, and it's been the versions have been rewritten and rewritten and rewritten, and
yeah.
What we're looking at is a way of life that the purity is not there in our time, because the things in which we have done to the planet, and when you're talking about killing and foxes and all of these things, you came to their community and built your house. They lived there before you got there. So how dare we come and say these animals are doing something wrong when we came in and tore down trees and destroyed their natural foods? And so we're looking back in the part you were talking about when we were coming up and eating, you know, these things who brought us here against our will, our ancestors against our will, and took the land from the people that lived here, that ate from the land, and came and imposed their will in saying that you have to buy from me and get from me. And these are the things that we're looking at and saying all of this is incorrect. Yes, it is correct, incorrect. But who was the person who incorrected, even when you go back to what you started with the Ten Commandments? Moses was taught the 42 laws, which says, I have not. It doesn't say that you have not. Thou means you. Mayat says, you confess that you have not done these things. Don't say someone else can't do it. Do look into yourself and see what you have and admit to the law and say, I have not killed, I have not committed adultery, I have not taken food from a child. And so we're looking at this as a guide, but we're misguided.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kwame. So the Bible is meant to be a guide for us, and many people have thrown the Bible out because of the King James Version. I hope you throw out the King James Version. But there are better translations that really can help us get back to the wisdom of this book and bring out the principles that can help us, number one, avoid the fear-mongering, because the Bible is a book of faith. And it builds up our faith in what? The universal energy of love, the universal energy of reaping and sowing awareness, that if you plant a certain seed of hate, you're going to get it back to you. If you kill all these animals, that somehow it's going to come back in our face, possibly mass shooting. So let me go to another caller before we go to the break. 773-977, your mic is open. Are you there? 773, check your mute button. 773.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Sorry about that. I was just talking. Good morning to all. This is Lois here in Chicago, Illinois. You know, our conversation this morning is so exciting. And everything that's been said, well, just God bless you all. I mean, it's just beautiful. But I want to add the beans to our guest list of foods with the chitlins and what have you, the beans and cornbread. I mean, he forgot about that. And
yeah.
and the homemade biscuits that we had in the mornings with salt pork and syrup.
Yeah.
I mean, delicious. So we're here, and I'd like to know how old is the gentleman after eating the chitlins. My father told me that he's from Vidalia, Louisiana, he said, and thanks for honoring your father so much. I wanted to just, congratulate you on that. They said that a girl will always love her father, no matter what. And I tell these men, when you have daughters that don't treat you properly, you better go get a DNA. You know. But anyway, getting back to the food, you know, my father would make that big pan of cornbread. You know, there was 10 of us, and beans. Sometimes we didn't even have meat, and sometimes we ate just grits for breakfast, pork and beans for lunch. It was a loaf of bread and a can of pork and beans, Camel's pork and beans. They used to cost 25 cents a can. That was 26 cents with tax back then, okay? And a loaf of bread, about 22 cents for a loaf of bread. A loaf of bread today is, almost $4 or $5? Children, our grandchildren, they're going to be suffering, you know, even after we're gone. This society is so warped. The doctors, they're warped. Well, not all of them. The lawyers, the police officers, you know, the ones that are causing harm, that are talking about the Bible, the ones that love the Lord and appreciate being alive, They're not doing. They're talking, but they're not doing. And right. So all of us have to just realize God is still in control. No matter what, he still loves us. He's not like some of these so-called friends. You know, you say something wrong and they won't speak to you forever. You know, God is not like that. So he loves all of us. I love all of us. You know, you have to love yourself first. And thanks for the show today. And thanks for coming in and telling the truth. And they should tell how they got whipped back then also, our parents, how my father said his mother whipped him with a whip, a horse whip. He said his mother could, you could be across the street and his mother could swing that whip and get you. Yeah. So, and then when they came up with ironing cords, they came back with, they told me that the teachers used to whip you if they wanted to with a switch. You'd have to go outside, get a switch, and bring it back to the teacher back in their day. You know, so a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have changed. And as I said before, I feel that we all have to stay armed with God. We have to obey the commandments. We can't throw them away. You know, give them to someone, to the jails, or to somebody who might not have nothing. Everything to God's will is never going to change. Because we all are here, and we're evidence of his word, all of us right now. So thank you so much for your time, and God bless you. Love you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lois. You're always such a refreshing voice and so uplifting and joyful. And when we come back, I'm going to let Mikhail share about the biscuits. them biscuits and grits and all that. And as Mikhail will have you know, that was, like you said, sometimes the only meal. So we'll be right back after this message. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about biblical and faith laws for better health. And it's just fun to think about all the food, so-called food, that our ancestors and our grandparents and parents ate that really led to disease. It was comforting. It was great tasting. But today, with all the wizards of monkeypox and attacking us with fear and all that, we got to have another plan. And we're just suggesting we start with the foundation of Bible truth, Bible wisdom. And we'll be right back to continue this discussion.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is a result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
back. Thank you for joining us this morning, and thank you for contributing your life stories about eating, especially, and the Bible and your relationship to the Creator. I don't call God a he, because in my journey, if the universe is God and God is the universe, then there's no gender on the universe. It's both male, female, yin, yang. So my experience, though, with food, my dad was born in New Orleans, so we ate a lot of red beans and rice. And corn, my mother was a really good cook. She was the one killing in the chitlins, Mikhail, in our kitchen. And my mother was an alcoholic, so she'd be cleaning those chitlins with a can of beer or some kind of alcohol right there next to her. I was like, that's how she got through that. But we also ate a lot of gumbo. Oh, my goodness. That was one of my dad's favorite meals from childhood. And if you can imagine, back in the Jim Crow South, gumbo was like a real treat. They threw everything from lobster in there. If you had some lobster from the ocean catch, or sausage and okra. And my mother could cook some gumbo, because my dad must have taught her or something, because he was from New Orleans. But we ate a lot of gumbo, which had a lot of unclean meat in it. But we also had, like Lois mentioned, a lot of red beans and rice. But my mother always threw a little pork in them red beans. So, Mikhail, I'm going to let you answer Lois's question. She wanted to know how old you were. I don't know if you want to reveal that. But the biscuits, tell her about the biscuits your aunt made.
Yeah, okay. You said something, too, that was, that I could relate to, because you said your dad was from New Orleans. Well, my uncle, as I was telling everybody, I was raised by my aunt and uncle. And my aunt, she was from South Carolina. My uncle was from Louisiana. I don't know if he was from New Orleans, but he was a Creole. And so, we ate a lot of food that was, related to that. They loved gumbo, but my aunt, she wasn't really into... I mean, she would eat other people's gumbo, but she didn't. I don't recall her making the gumbo. She would make stuff that was like gumbo, but I don't recall the gumbo itself. She may have, and I just don't recall. But anyway, getting back to the biscuits, you and I, and Cornbread, we were just talking about that last night.
I know.
It's amazing. Lois mentions it, and then she also mentioned about the beatings. Man, she's talking about. I don't know if I was telling. I think. Well, I mentioned about if things weren't done right, I got beat. Well, I got beat with ironing court. Getting beat with the ironing court, when, like she was saying about her mom swinging that whip. I was thinking about when she said that. I thought about my aunt swinging that, because I always got beat by my aunt. My uncle never beat me. He never spanked me. Sometimes he would stop her because she'd be beating the crap out of me, and he would stop her because it would be overkill. She was alcoholic too, and so that's amazing that you were saying that, and I could relate to what you were saying. But anyway, when she was swinging that ironing court, it didn't matter where it hit me. If it hit me in the head, face, wherever, and a lot of times sometimes I end up with webs in my face and stuff, because she just swing that cord, and, wherever it hit you, it hit you. And that thing was heavy, and it hurt like the dickens.
And then she throw some biscuits at you to eat?
and throw the biscuit. You know, as we were talking last night, I was telling you, no, as far as I'm concerned, nobody can make biscuits. She was the only one that could make, and I've had all kinds of biscuits, the ones in the store, I tried different ones after I, got out of the house and everything, and I tried other people's biscuits, and some of these restaurants that they, talk about how good their biscuits are. Are you kidding me? I'm like, you
Red
don't
lobster.
Even know.
Red Lobster comes close, maybe.
On those biscuits, we could just put butter on them and just eat biscuits all day. They were just that good, and you had to stop yourself. She would put a lemon on it, because, I mean, you just want to eat biscuit, and then you take some syrup. If you had to, if you went butter and syrup, man, it was like you were in hog heaven, so to speak.
Again.
And then another thing, Lois, she would do the biscuit bread sometimes on the top of the stove in the skillet.
Mm.
And we would have that, like, maybe for dinner with whatever we had. If she's made something with gravy, like chicken and gravy, or we had pork and gravy or beef and gravy that you used to get in the cans. So, yeah, I mean, you know, being 70 years old, you know, it goes back to when the government, you could get, even though I told you we weren't poor, but we still got some of those things. And sometimes we would get them for, you know, because the neighbors shared. And so, you know, like you could get cheese, you could get the can. And then sometimes sometimes they delivered it to our house, from what I remember.
Yeah.
From
oh,
what
yeah.
I believe. So we could get those things. And so it wasn't just for the poor, but I guess if you were at a certain income level, you could get it. If you knew how to, you know, use the system or whatever, you could still get those things. And so the cornbread, I was telling you, Viata, last night, you know, the cornbread that she made, she never used Jiffy. She always made it from scratch. And it put Jiffy to shame because, I mean, cornbread, the way she made it, it was just not too sweet, just right, and it was, you know, the consistency of it and everything, and you could just put butter on that and just eat cornbread and just get full on cornbread because it was so good. You didn't want to stop eating.
Yeah, so I think we have a beautiful history of survival food and comfort food, and now in 2022, we're waking the hell up because our ancestors had so much disease. So let me go to another caller because I love this discussion. I want everybody to chime in if they want. 773-221, your mic is open.
Yes, thank you, Viata, to Brother Mikhail. You know, my mother was born in the British West Indies, and I don't recall us ever really having pork initially until after she married my stepfather when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and he was from Alabama. And so I did not develop much of a taste for pork. It would be a very rare occasion when, you know, we might have ham on
Easter. On Easter, everybody had
Christmas
on
or Thanksgiving. But my point is that I can certainly do without pork, and there should be regularity to our diet. We should eat no more than once a day, particularly by the time we're 16 years old. This is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches, and it's very important that we not dig our graves with a fork or with our teeth. And I'm one who observes moderation. I myself, speaking anecdotally, a neighbor of mine barbecued some pork chops for me a couple of weeks ago, and I ate them and I enjoyed them. But I don't spend money purchasing pork. I don't eat shrimp. I don't eat any kind of scavenger. Ideally, one should develop a taste for fresh fruits and vegetables, especially fruits and vegetables with seeds. That's true. And the less a person eats, the better. If a person is, you know, content and feels perfectly good with eating one small meal every day, more power to them. And people should occasionally go on a fast. These are things that should come naturally for a righteous person. I don't think any self-respecting person would consume the entrails of any animal. They're just things that people instinctively know and do and know how to do. I'm not a medical doctor trained, but I know the human physiology and bodily autonomy, my body, my choice. That doesn't apply just to abortion. That applies to a person's inalienable right to security of person and bodily autonomy.
Okay. So thank you. Thank you. And that's Andrew Nelson in Chicago. For those words of wisdom. Yeah, Kwame, your mic's open.
Yeah, and I just, and greetings, Brother Andrew. But the thing that I had a call that came in, but what I wanted to, the baby formula shortage and this whole thing, and everybody's panicking about the FDA shut down the company that makes 40% of the baby formula in this country. And what I'm looking at is that how can we come to this point that shows something about us? A woman conceives and has breast milk. Why would we look at chemicals that they want to feed a child from the beginning of his time in the world?
Well, that is the question that many of us are asking, but having my mother, even in 1955, my mother was using formula. She didn't breastfeed me totally. And I don't know exactly why, because I never even asked her that question because it wasn't really relevant. But there are a lot of women for various reasons who either choose not to breastfeed, they can't breastfeed. I know one woman I remember, she had inverted nipples. So it was really hard. She had to use a machine to pump the milk out of her breast. And that became painful and all that. So a lot of women really struggle with that. But I want to go into you are what you eat, because what we're talking about for the last 45 minutes or so is that we had a lot of comfort food. Our parents fed us comfort food. Our parents were in survival mode. Many of them were straight out of slavery with their mind. We got to eat collard greens, all kinds of greens. We got to eat all these animals. And now we are in a stage, a new paradigm of thinking about what we're eating, why we're eating it, and is it going to lead to diabetes and disease like our parents? So here's a little clip. It's only about 4 minutes. You are what you eat. That's a very popular that we all think about.
Is it true that you are what you eat? The phrase you often hear, you are what you eat, has been a core belief in many cultures throughout history. The ancient Aztecs would eat the brain of their rivals because they believed it gave them the wisdom and knowledge of their enemies. In India, some cultures do not eat onion and garlic as they believe foods with strong odors led to aggressive and offensive behaviors. The Nordic Vikings believed that drinking the blood of a bear or wolf before battle gave them the ferocity of the animal they drank. In China, there is a high demand for tiger penis because men there believe eating it will boost libido and cure erectile dysfunction. Around the world and throughout history, we see fascinating and bizarre examples of traditions that center around the idea that you embody what you eat. Today, most of these mythical beliefs have faded away, but there is still much validity to the phrase, you are what you eat. So what exactly does this phrase mean? Today, Health Chronicle will help explain that to us. Considering the thousands of pages of highfalutin academic and philosophical discourse written on the topic, the meaning of the phrase is pretty simple. If you eat crappy food, you're going to feel crappy. If you eat healthy food, then you will feel and look healthy. You are what you put into your body. Now let's take the crux of this you are what you eat message and look at it more closely, through a scientific lens. What you eat determines even the composition of your cellular membranes. That's right, all the way down to the tiniest building blocks of your entire body, those little blocks that build your bones, your organs, your muscles, and your brain, you are what you eat. Then consider this. The average adult loses around 300 billion cells to old age every single day. How does their body replace those cells? With the food we eat, literally. That food becomes the fuel for our body's own manufacturing plant to replace cells that die. When we eat toxic, chemically laden, nutritionless food, our bodies have a hard time manufacturing new, healthy cells. It would be like giving a man a blunt hammer in the middle of a desert and asking him to build a massive castle. or filling a race car gas tank with sand and expecting it to win. Our bodies carry out billions of functions every second with those cells. Thus, another popular phrase that our bodies are a temple. Only instead of putting clean fuel in the machine, we put in excrement and expect this machine to make a masterpiece. Though our body is infinitely intelligent and even figures out how to replace our cells to some extent despite our poor food choices, it can only improvise on the making of a masterpiece for so long before it runs out of ideas. Eventually, eating processed junk food will lead to your cells becoming processed junk. Genetically modified food equals a genetically modified you. So, drink clean water, eat more fresh vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds. Allow your digestive system to work as it should by reducing chronic inflammation with a better diet and consistent, moderate exercise, and you'll even be able to extract more of the good stuff out of your food. Your body will also be able to dump the bad stuff with more ease. In brief, you are what you eat. More than 300 billion cells depend on the fuel you give your body. Make sure you give it the good stuff. A special thanks to Health Chronicle for the...
So with that knowledge and what we've all talked about, we're overeating. We're totally overeating in this society. Food is being wasted. There's a fast food joint on every corner frying up dead food. And it's that we're at a point where the monkeypox wizard is loose. So fear is now going to be the emotion that people are going to have to deal with in terms of their health, just like the last 2 years. So our words are going to become even more important. And, you know, it's interesting how we talk about how we were whipped with ironing cords and all these things were happening. Mute somebody. Okay. All these things were happening. Our parents were disciplining with a lot of violence. And so on the Female Solution, we're shifting toward nonviolent child rearing. And what our parents used for discipline in the past is really not acceptable for us on the Female Solution anymore. We're more like, it's time to stop the beatings and the whippings, and it's time for us to learn how to discipline children in a better way, because that's kind of a slave mentality. That's one of the things in the Bible that a lot of our parents took to heart is like, you got to beat the child with a rod. You know, that they really took on that biblical law. Beat every child with a rod because they're going to be better children, right? Well, not necessarily. So we want to talk about now the word. The Proverbs 18:21 says the tongue has the power of life and death. And if you have something on this, feel free to speak. But I'm going to play a little something about the word. This is a very, in my opinion, religious type analysis, but I want to play this just as a jump start of being more conscious about what comes out of our mouth and what does life and death mean.
Proverbs 18 and verse 21.
Proverbs 18, 21.
Life and death are in the power.
Death and life.
Death and life are in the power of the tongue.
Death and life are in the power of the tongue.
The tongue has the power of life and death.
Death or life
are in the power of your tongue.
What's up, y'all? So I am super excited because today we are starting a new segment of videos on this channel entitled, What Does This Verse Mean? So whenever you come across a verse in the Bible and you are confused about what that verse means, do me a favor and drop it in the comment section of this video or any video for that matter. And as I go through the comment section and I see that verse, I will do my best in a future video to answer that question and help bring some clarity on what that Bible verse actually means. So today we're looking at Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, a very familiar verse of scripture where it says, the power of life and death is in the tongue. And so sometimes you'll hear somebody, normally from the Word of Faith camp, and they will use this verse and they'll say, the power of life and death is in the tongue. And so, you know, because God used the tongue to create, then God has given us the ability to create, and it's all in your tongue, and you can create, speak life and all that stuff, right? But is that really what this verse is actually talking about? I don't believe so. So in this video, I'm going to give you some ways that you can use your tongue for death. And I'm also going to show you some ways that you can use your tongue for light. And then more importantly, towards the end of this video, I'm going to give you three basic, solid biblical principles for how you can conduct yourself and use your tongue for the glory of God. All right, let's jump in. So one of the ways that you can speak death into such a situation and use your tongue in a negative way is criticism. And this is whenever you and I use our mouth to focus specifically on the faults and the failures and the shortcomings of someone else. Number two is discouragement. And this is whenever we use our tongues to try to remove courage in somebody so that they don't have what they need in terms of courage to step out and fulfill God's purpose or plan for their lives, no matter what that might be. Number three is gossip. And this is typically whenever somebody has shared some information to us privately. They have not given us the right to share that with anyone else. But we take it upon ourselves to share that information that was shared with us in secrecy with someone else. You know, the Bible has a lot to say about that in the book of Proverbs, where it says, a gossip goes around telling secrets, but those who are trustworthy can keep a confidence. The fourth way that we can speak death into a situation is through slander. And this is whenever we seek to defame someone else's character or their name by spreading false information about them. And number five is rage. And this is whenever we express our emotions with outbursts of anger. You know, Paul mentions this in a list of sins that we need to avoid that demonstrate that you and I are living in the flesh. Notice he says this in Galatians. He says, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, the results are very clear. Sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, and here it is, outbursts of anger. So if you want to know whether you're living in the flesh or not, check how often you use your tongue as a way of expressing outbursts of anger. Now remember, the verse says that the power of life and death is in the tongue. So you can either use your tongue to destroy or you can use your tongue to speak life into a situation. And so let me give you three quick ways on how you can do that. Number one is the opposite of discouragement, which is encouragement. And this is whenever we use our tongues to build people up and to remind them of what God's plan is for their life so that now we're not removing courage for them. We're actually infusing courage in this person to fulfill God's plan and purpose for their life. The second way that we can speak life into a situation is through intercessory prayer. And this is whenever we take the time to either pray for or better yet, pray with somebody so that they can hear us speak and pray the promises of God over their life. And then a third way that you can speak life into somebody's situation is through knowledge. And this is whenever we share our wisdom, our experiences, and our advice, hopefully from a godly biblical perspective, to help somebody make a decision that would honor God. Now, with all of that being said, let me give you three guiding principles that should always remain in your mind as you are seeking to try to tame your tongue, control your mouth, and essentially use it for the glory of God. Principle number one is to speak slowly. In other words, whenever we are communicating with someone, oftentimes we get in trouble whenever we speak too fast, whenever we don't think before we speak. James reminds us of this, and he says this, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. So James reminds us that in the heat of discussion, whenever you are upset, whether you're frustrated, whether you're arguing with somebody, just remember at all times to speak slowly, because the slower you speak, the more you will think before you speak. Principle number two is not only speak slowly, but speak truthfully, all right? Because sometimes whenever we are in the heat of battle, We're not necessarily speaking truth. We're speaking how we feel about something, but it may or may not actually be what is true in that specific instance. Paul once again reminds us here in Ephesians, and he says, therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. That word falsehood is the Greek word pseudos, from which we get our English word pseudonym or fake or phony. And this is reminding us that whenever we are speaking, we need to make sure that whatever we are saying is truth. So not only should we speak slowly, and not only should we speak truthfully, but number three, we should speak graciously. Notice once again, Paul says this, let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone. Listen, often.
So we have to go to a break, but that is so important in terms of disciplining children, speaking slowly. If we're going to come out of the abusive behavior that our parents use to discipline children with iron cords and whips and all that, one of the important teachings I've listened to and we talk about on Female Solution is exactly what we're disciplining our children. They're going to pay attention if we are speaking slowly versus you bad mother, Emma, dad, how could you do that? They're not going to pay attention if we are speaking fast and yelling at them and not speaking truthfully and honoring this soul, this little soul. I look at my grandchildren and I'm like, who are these little people? Who are they? Because sometimes what comes out of their mouth is just not of a human being. It's like an alien or something. So we have to, and we should take this advice that he's giving here to replace the abusive, violent behavior of disciplining children with a whip or an iron cord and all that, is to see slowly and honor the soul within the 5-year-old, the 2-year-old, the 8-year-old, the teenager. That is how I think we're going to change the minds of our youth and raise a new generation of healthy adults. Because I know that some of those beatings and harmful behavior from parents to children has affected them in their adult life. Not just the abusive behavior, but then the lack of communication that said, I love you, I understand you, and I'm going to listen to you even at 5 or 8 or 15. I'm going to take the time to listen to you and understand who is the soul behind this little body. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I have a really thought-provoking audio about choices we make in terms of animals and behavior, and then we'll finish up with your comments if you like at the end. But we'll be right back after this.
We all say we would like to be wealthy, but wealth isn't determined by how much money you have. Wealth is determined by your power to define what money is. The dictionary defines money as something used as a way to pay for goods and services and to pay people for their work. So how would you like to have access to an unlimited source of money? Money that is not taxed by the government. Money that increases as you share the opportunity with others. Money that you can use to pay for goods and services and pay people for their work. I'm talking about Bitcoin. It's the future of independent wealth building. Bitcoin is the new money that you control. Get started building your wealth. Call 312-849-3456. That's 312-849-3456.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
About our ancestors, our parents, grandparents, and the behavior that gave us comfort food, but yet it also led to disease. Oh my goodness, I can't, I remember all the people, adults in my life who had diabetes. So we have our Monday morning host, Zelda, wrote a book about this, about a donut, something about the diabetic donut. So she learned a lot about that, and she's, I believe she's overcome that disease. And so we're all learning about what is the habits and behavior that was practiced in the past that led to disease. Do we want to continue eating the scavenger food that the Bible warns us not to eat, the pig especially? And then just in general, grits was mentioned a bit in our history, and the diet that killed a lot of our ancestors. But here's a very thought-provoking audio about ethics, the ethics of killing animals for food. And I'm not about turning anybody into a vegetarian. I think it's just something we have to think about in terms of the karmic energy that we put out. He mentioned in the last audio about rage and anger. If you find yourself expressing rage and anger frequently, then that's a frequency. That's an energy that is going to not only affect you, but it's affecting the whole planet when people are out there with rage and anger, killing people. So here's just a thought-provoking audio about the ethics of killing animals. I just thought this was really...
My name is Tyler Doggett. I teach at the University of Vermont, and I'm going to talk about whether it's morally permissible to kill animals for food. One thing I'm not going to talk about is whether it's morally permissible to eat animals for food. I'm also not going to talk about whether it's okay, morally okay, to buy animals for food. What I want to talk about is whether it's morally permissible to kill animals for food in the first place. And we do kill a lot of animals for food each year. Millions of pigs are killed for food each year. Is that permissible? Over 20 million pigs were killed last year for food. Is that morally permissible? In particular, is it morally permissible to kill pigs for food that we don't need to eat? I'm not talking about a situation where you're all alone on a desert island and if you don't kill that pig, you're going to die. I'm talking about the situation we're in right now, which is we don't have to kill pigs to eat. We could all eat kale sandwiches. But instead, because they're delicious, we kill millions of pigs each year. Is that morally permissible? That's what I want to talk about. But let's talk about a different question first. Is it morally permissible to kill people for food? And again, I'm not talking about a situation like the Donner Party or situations where people crash land on a deserted island, and if they don't eat each other, they're going to die. I mean, would it be permissible for you to keep some stranger in your house and kill that stranger for food rather than eat a kale sandwich? We don't have to talk about that question for very long. That has an easy answer. No, it is morally impermissible to kill people for food you don't need to eat. So let me ask you this. If it is permissible to kill pigs for food, but not permissible to kill people for food, there must be some difference between pigs and people that explains why it's permissible to kill the pig, but not the person. So what's the difference? Here's an idea. The pig is a pig. The person is a person. So this difference, I think, is supposed to be a difference in genetic makeup, the type of DNA the pig has. That's different from our genetic makeup. So is that the kind of difference that explains why it's morally permissible to kill the pig, but not morally permissible to kill us? Let me ask you this. There's a Twilight Zone episode called To Serve Man. If you want to see that episode, you should skip this part of the video because I'm going to give away something very important. In the Twilight Zone episode, To Serve Man, aliens come to Earth. And to make a long story short, they're farming us for food. Is that morally permissible? And I think, no, it's not permissible for me to eat people for food I don't need. Neither is it permissible for aliens to eat us. But then imagine the alien says, but don't you see? You're a different sort of creature than we are. We have totally different genetic makeups. That does not seem like a very good answer the alien's given. One thing you might say is, yes, I see that we have different genetic makeups, but I'm still the kind of thing you shouldn't kill. But a pig might say that to us if we say, it's permissible for us to kill you because you're a pig and we are people. But maybe what you're getting at when you say a pig's a person is people are special because, well, for one thing, we're quite a bit smarter than pigs, which isn't to say pigs are dummies. Pigs are pretty smart. People, just smarter. Okay. One thing you might ask is, why does that make it okay to kill the pig? But that's not what I want to ask. Because while I think you're smarter than a pig, you're watching a philosophy video. Not everyone is smarter than a pig. In fact, we all know some creatures. Some people, even probably, who are not smarter than pigs. Is it okay to eat those people? No, that's not a hard question. Now, one reason it might be you shouldn't eat people who have mental lives of pigs. We care about those people. It might be that my brother has the mental life of a pig, but it would be wrong to kill him for food because I care about him. But let me ask you two things about this. First, why does caring about my brother make a difference? If the reason it's wrong to kill my severely mentally handicapped brother for food is because I care about him, then what you're saying is the reason it's wrong doesn't have to do with my brother so much as it has to do with me. And that does not seem correct. It seems like there's something about what you're doing to my brother when you kill him for food. It's objectionable. It has nothing to do with what you're doing to me. Well, let me ask you a different question. What if no one cared about my brother? What if my brother, with the mental life of a pig, were a hermit? No one cared about him. No one even knew about him. Would it be permissible to kill him for food then? I don't think so. I still think this is not a hard question. What we're looking for is a difference between people and pigs that explains why it's morally permissible to kill pigs for food, but not permissible to kill people. And we've tried some differences out. They're different species, but that doesn't really seem to explain it. People are smarter, in general, than pigs. That doesn't seem to explain it either. We care about people, don't care about pigs. That doesn't seem to explain it either. What else? Well, here's something people say sometimes when you talk about this. The pig would do it to us. Put a person with a pig. The pig might eventually eat the person. Does that show it's morally permissible for the person to eat the pig? Let me ask you a different question. Have you ever been punched by a very small child? I have. Do you think it was permissible for me to punch the child back, reasoning, he did it to me, therefore it's permissible for me to do it to him? I think that would not be very good reasoning. It would be wrong to punch the child, even though the child would do it to me. In fact, I think the child, if the child is young enough, doesn't do anything wrong if it does it to me. The child is not the kind of thing that does anything right or wrong. But still, we might do wrong to it. Last difference. We're the top of the food chain, you know, where we live in places where we can watch philosophy videos. Obviously, if we lived in the ocean, we wouldn't be the top of the food chain. But where we are, we're the top of the food chain. So isn't it morally permissible for us to take advantage of that and kill whatever we want for food? It might be that we're in a position to do various things to other animals because we're the top of the food chain. But that doesn't mean it's morally permissible for us to do it. I'm a very small person. I'm constantly dealing with people who are much bigger than I am, who are much stronger than I am, who could pound me to a pulp very easily. Well, imagine they did. And I said, you shouldn't have done that. That was morally wrong. And they say, but don't you see? I'm stronger than you. That's terrible reasoning. Of course they're stronger than me. But what I wanted to know is why it was okay for them to express their strength in that way. Similarly, it might be that we're above the pig on the food chain. And as we get ready to kill the pig to eat it, the pig might say, why are you eating me? And we just say, we can. We have control over you. That does not seem like a very good answer. Sometimes people say something related, which is, that's just the way nature is. That's why it's morally permissible. But it's natural to do all sorts of things that are morally wrong. If you're listening to this video and getting really frustrated, it's natural to want to punch me. It might be natural to punch me, but that doesn't mean you should do it. So I'm perplexed. I started off asking whether it's okay to kill pigs for food. To answer that question, I asked first a very easy question, whether it's okay to kill people for food. That's an easy question. The answer is no. And then I asked, what's the difference between people and pigs such that it's permissible to kill pigs for food, even though it's not permissible to kill people? And I've gone through a bunch of differences. None of them seem like they do the work that's required. None of them seem like they explain why it's okay to kill pigs for food, but it's not okay to kill people for food. So I hope you'll help me figure out the answer or decide it's morally wrong to kill pigs for food. Thanks.
So we take a deep breath after hearing something like that, and we might think about, well, we don't have to be so hard-nosed about everything. You can't ever eat this. You can't ever do this. I don't drink alcohol on a regular basis at all because I drank enough as a young person. But when I sat down recently with a friend who had buried her mother the week before, we all had a glass of wine and laughed and relaxed and released some of the tension of burying your mother who was 91 years old. But that was enough alcohol for me for probably the rest of the year. So there are those occasions where maybe you might want to even have a piece of ham or something. But I hope after listening to this this lecture on morals, the Bible is really a book about morals and wisdom and so much more. Can we take the principles and make a better body, a better healthy body, and share this wisdom with others? So I'm going to let my audience comment on that, starting with Mikhail. Do you have any comments as we close the show on what you just heard? And I think the bottom line is Genesis 1:29. Every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed to you, it shall be for food. There is a spectrum of what we can nourish our bodies with. My friend Elitam Elamine, who's a breatharian, has taught me we don't really need food at all if we have a higher consciousness and if we are living a life of high frequency emotions of forgiveness and love and compassion and peace and joy. That's the frequency that nourishes us. We don't need any food at all, according to him. But he's on the end of the spectrum, almost like an alien. And then we have those over on the other end who are eating everything on the planet that says it's eatable, it's edible. So how do we get more toward the center? And I think more in the side of Elitam Elamine, where we don't need a lot of food at all. Mikhail, would you like to comment on this?
Well, as I listen to you, as I listen to, you know, the other different people that have, you know, given input, actually, I'm thinking that, you know, in this day and age, when we actually look at how our food manufacturer and distributors and the food growers and all that, the way things are now and the way the food is being basically genetically modified, I mean, the plants, the animals, that we eat, you know, that I'm going to say we, that people eat, everything is being, you know, genetically modified, and which is also changing the, you know, okay, going back to what we heard about you are what you eat, changing our DNA and making us into something that different than what we originally were designed to be, okay? And so
right.
I'm thinking that, all right, also what you what he this last speaker was mentioning related to also what someone else had said earlier, the eating of dead animals, how can that produce living cells?
Right.
And I think that's what I think about. And so, and then I also thought about how that the wild animals, like for instance the lion, when the lion kills a prey, he's eating that actually that living, he, you know, he's eating it while actually he's eating it while it's alive.
Right.
You know, that's not funny to me really, but I'm just
warm,
you know,
blood, warm blood. He's licking the warm blood actually.
Right, so he's eating something that's alive. And from what I understand, the lion, and I learned this, you know, that they go for the stomach, and they basically, so they're eating the, they're getting vegetables, they're eating this, usually the animal that they're eating is a what do you call it, a herbivore or whatever. And so
he
begins eating that animal's stomach. So he's getting his vegetables along with his meat.
That's funny.
And everything's alive. Everything's living.
Right.
So look at what he's doing. And so that's kind of like an example for us. Why don't we eat the living things? You know, like you said, you know, when you mentioned that scripture that talks about what really is food. And so here you have the herbivore that's eating the herbs. Okay, and then you have the carnivore that's eating the herbivore, and he's getting his herbs and his – and so I'm like, okay, you know, there's a lot that we can learn from that type of situation. And as we see that food is becoming GMO and all of that and messed up, why do you want to eat that?
And you know what I just thought about is that when we observe nature like that, animals, how the animals are eating, the herbivores and so forth, that's God or that's Yahuwah. That is the wisdom we can observe in real time versus reading scriptures or the Bible. If you're spending time outside and watching how the swan or the geese at the park are going into the ground pulling up worms, they're pulling up worms out of the ground as they walk. We see the birds are flying around, going around, picking up things off the ground. The cows and the horses all day long, their heads are in the grass, eating grass. That's what they, if you've ever lived near a farm or on a rural area, that's what you observe all day, every time. The cows have their head down, eating grass. The horses got their heads down, eating grass. So even if you don't pick up a Bible or a holy book, just watch what animals do in nature. They don't cook their food. They don't eat dead food. They're out there getting all their food. And that is G-O-D, the creator universe in action. So thank you for helping me remember that the Bible doesn't even have to be picked up if you are outside observing God in action. And the creator Yahuwah in action. And then you go to the teachings that Kwame often brings us about the cosmos. If you have someone like Kwame Seymour in your life, you can sit out all day watching animals, and you can think about what's going on above our heads. So Kwame, your mic is open. Do you have any final comments you'd like to make? I don't know if you're on mute. He might be busy. He's on the road.
No, I've got it. And, you know, you played that everything is in divine order. As you were playing that and I was coming off to stop for gas, the semi that was beside me had a whole truck, a whole semi full of pigs. I guess they're going to the market. And I'm going like, wow, ain't this something? They're talking about pigs, and here they are driving alongside of me with all these pigs in the truck. I'm going like, okay, this is divine order. But
oh
the
goodness.
Part that I got was the other one when the guy was talking about the tongue and
yeah.
saying the power of life and death is in the tongue. But James 1:8 says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And
right.
then looking at this biblical scripture, the part of eating is that we live, or most people live in, you're banned from nature. So you're not in a natural environment, so you're eating unnatural. And we have made humans orphans to Mother Earth by putting them out of their environment, because you eat from your environment. This is what the biblical is talking about, because it was written with those people that ate from the land that they were on, because when he spoke, there was always the speaking was done in nature, not in a building. And so what we're looking at is that GMOs, the genetically modified organisms, is the part what you're saying is GMO is God made the original. We're not in the original. We're not utilizing the original. As above, so below, because I talked about, you know, the energies that's coming from in the galaxy to the Earth, and the ice and the climate melting that's happening on the planet. That ice was frozen. Water has memory and consciousness, and it's evaporating to put the purity back into the atmosphere that we are now in danger of destroying ourselves.
Wow, that's a study in itself. And you were on a YouTube teaching that. What's the name of that YouTube?
That was Black Magic, Rich, brother.
Okay.
Well, he just moved to Atlanta. It's called Black Magic. And what I was talking about is the memory of God. And the part of the memory is that's why he did it, because Dr. Emoto showed us by the ice and the formation of the sacred geometry, the pureness of our words. That's what I said about the tongue. Because the tongue is not the problem nowadays. It's more so the texting and the computer. We jump from our tongue to the texting. Anyway,
yeah,
I'll let y'all go.
Oh, wow, that's deep to think about. We might have to do a show soon. The power of texting or something like that, because you're right, that's taken over in the influence of our language is what people are sending out over that phone. So that would be a whole nother show. I'll let you know. But thank you all so much for participating today in coming to the conclusion that even if you don't read the Bible, you can go out in nature and see the Bible in action. And then go check out Kwame's video he did. On a YouTube video, just search for Black Magic on YouTube and then look for Kwame. So thank you all. We're at the end, and tomorrow come back for another Female Solution show on wisdom, and Zana from the UK will be with us tomorrow talking more about health from a UK perspective. So everybody have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow here on the Female Solution.
Poland. Jean-Claude.
Jean-Claude.
France. Merci.
Merci beaucoup.
Spain. Gracias.
Gracias.
Italy. Grazie.
Grazie.
Egypt. Shukran.
Shukran.
Ghana. Madasi. Nigeria. Eshe. South Africa. Nyabonga.
Nyabonga.
Senegal. Geret.
Geret.
Kenya. Asante.
Asante.
Israel. Toda,
Pakistan,
Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you, and the mercy of God, and God's blessings.